Thank you, Father, for allowing me to actually come here and talk. I think that usually anytime you talk about the devil, you get a sizable crowd. So what I want to talk to you today is about how to keep yourself protected from diabolic influence and your family members and things of that sort. There's a lot of information. You're going to get a lot of information in a very short period of time. So just try and, you know, appropriate some of it. I'm going to break it down into a few categories. The first is psychological things that people have to be aware of how demons influence us psychologically and how to be perceptive of those things. Then we'll talk about the spiritual things that you can do to actually help along that line as well. As to the psychological things, most people don't realize is that when Adam and Eve fell, what happened was is they ceded a certain amount of control over their body to Satan and those under him. And the reason for that is that in committing the sin, they took themselves out from underneath God and placed themselves under the domination and control of Satan. And that meant that the demons have access to any aspect of your body whatsoever. That's a very important point. I mentioned it, I think, the last time I was here and talked, but I want to reemphasize this because it's something that is extremely important. When God created the angels, he established what's called the divine economy of authority, which means authority has a specific structure, a set of laws, and ways that it functions, and he built that into this structure. And the demons know that, and they have to obey it. They have to live according to it. They don't like it, but it's a structure that's there. But they also make use of it. And normally what ends up happening is people will commit a mortal sin, and as a result, they're taken out from that, which means they're acting against the authority. St. Thomas says, I'll state the principle and then we'll kind of parse out what it means. He says, whoever acts contrary to the principle of an order is deprived of the effects of that order. What does that mean? It means if you act contrary to the authority, you are robbed of the effects of the authority. So let me give you an example. You tell your child, look, she's 2 years old, you say, don't go out in this, or three, don't go out in the street, right? Just stay here in the yard. When they disobey, which means they're stepping out from underneath your authority, the child runs out in the street and he gets run over. So essentially what that means is there's two things that authority do. They provide and they protect. So the protection, what happens is when you act contrary to the established order that God has arranged, you actually leave yourself unprotected. This is not just on the natural order with human beings. This is actually true even on a spiritual level. When Eve ate the fruit before Adam did, the fathers of the church are very consistent, said she was created into a state of subordination, which means she was actually under Adam when she was created. And so as a result, she was underneath his authority. It is the common opinion of the theologians that it pertains to the father to determine, or the husband to determine, the cult of the family. Now, the cult includes a code, that is, how you behave and what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. When she ate the apple, she stepped out from underneath Adam's protection, and as a result, she became subject to diabolic influence. The same thing is true in families today. It applies to children in relationship to their parents, priests in relationship to those who are above them, their superiors, wives in relationship to their husbands, everything. So anytime you act contrary to that, one of the things that happens is you can become diabolically influenced. This is one of the reasons why women will very often find their own interior life is much more settled, not just because it follows the order established by God, but they'll find that their interior life is much more settled because the demons don't want to get involved with somebody who is following right order. What they're always trying to do is get you to commit mortal sin and act contrary to the authority to get you out from underneath that so that you're not protected. So that brings up one of the first things, at least on a spiritual level, that you can keep track of, which is, well, two things. One, never under any circumstances lose your state of grace. The state of grace is your principal protection against diabolic influence. The odds of somebody becoming possessed or influenced in an extraordinary way who's in the state of grace is extremely rare. I've seen it, but it's extremely rare. The other side of it is, too, so never commit a mortal sin, period. Because as soon as you commit a mortal sin, you're underneath diabolic influence. And it makes it harder and harder and harder. And the more you commit the moral sin, the more you can become influenced. And it only takes one moral sin. That's it. One. To become diabolically influenced in an extraordinary way. There's two kinds of influence. Ordinary, like normal temptations. Everybody is subject to that. There's only one person that was not subject to that, and that's the Blessed Virgin. Right? She was never subject to temptation. In fact, that's why she's called Mother Inviolate. Right? So she was never subject to temptation. But the rest of us are, so we're all subject to temptation. But then there's extraordinary diabolic influence like possession, diabolic obsession, where people just can't keep their mind off of things, and oppression, where they start destroying the things around you, like your home, your family relationships, your work, that type of a thing. So all it takes is one mortal sin to be subject to extraordinary diabolic influence. I know a person who became possessed through a single act of pride. That's it. That's all it took. Because the pride was grave in that particular instance. Most people's pride is minor. Fornication. Anything that... pornography on the internet. All this stuff is stuff that I've seen people become possessed over these things. It takes just one. That's it. Now, ultimately, it's up to God to determine it. Because ultimately, He's the one who has complete control. Christ has absolute control over every facet of the diabolic war or the spiritual warfare, every single down to the minutia. He determines even the minutia. So most of the times that means that God blocks it. 99% of the time God blocks the possession, even though mortal sin by its very nature removes you from underneath the protection of God and places yourself under Satan. 99% of the time God blocks the extraordinary diabolic influence. But as people commit more and more mortal sins, it's becoming more and more prevalent. Okay, so never lose your state of grace and never commit mortal sin, right? Which go hand in hand, of course, but the main thing is you want to keep yourself spiritually protected. Okay, the demons can influence the body. So what this means is that all our psychological faculties, with the exception of, there's a part of the intellect that's actually spiritual, it's immaterial. That's the one that has the capacity for self-reflection, that type of thing. They don't have access to that. But they do have access to everything else. Your emotions, your imagination, your memory. This is one of the reasons why you never want to commit mortal sin or commit some kind of sin, because then it sticks in your memory and then they can use it against you. So that's one of the ways you protect yourself, is staying out of sin and not letting those things happen to you. If they have happened to you, one of the things you want to do is pray for healing of your memory and your imagination, things of that sort, because that will help you not to recall those things, and it'll block the demons from being able to influence you in that regard. So they have access to these things. So what does this mean concretely? One of the most helpful things that can help in protecting yourself is just being aware of the fact that they can influence you. Right? And how do they influence you? Well, they can act on your senses, but they don't do that too often. They can act on your, use your memories, but the imagination is one of the principal, their principal ways in which they have influenced people. So, let me give you an example. Someone walks in, your husband walks in, or your wife walks in, and she says something totally innocent, totally innocuous, there's nothing bad about what the person said. The demons can place on that image, it's in your imagination of your wife walking in, they can place on that a perspective of it, which makes you actually judge the thing differently than what's being said. People usually experience this in marriages, where the person is just seemed to be blocked from understanding, or they're just looking at this from just the wrong point of view, and there's some kind of stubbornness or obstinacy in relationship to how they're seeing it, but they can actually influence our perceptions. This is one of the reasons why I tell people one of the principal ways you protect yourself from diabolic influence is being very careful that anytime your perceptions are negative, you should normally just clear your mind and get your mind off it, and so that once it clears, you'll be able to see it more clearly and more rationally. And this is something that's very common. Demons, one of the things they principally do is, it's a total warfare tactic. It's called divide and conquer. Everybody knows about it. The first thing you do is try and divide them. The principal way they try to divide people is by getting people to hook on to the perspective that they have on what other people are doing or saying or things of that sort. That's why Christ said, do not judge. Because if you do that, you're already kind of opening yourself up to hooking into the perspective that the demons actually are putting on that thing that you see, right? So that's one of the, so when the, if you get something like that, you have to just get your mind off it and clear your mind. You have to practice custody of the senses. Again, these are just all on a psychological level, even though these are also virtues, by the way. You have to practice custody of the senses. Don't let anything come into your senses that's going to psychologically, morally, or spiritually take you down. That's what you have to do. This is one of the reasons why watching certain kinds of films, even though they in themselves may not necessarily be bad, they can end up marring our imagination or take us down spiritually. Like, you see this with people, they'll watch a movie that you know, really gets them agitated and worked up and angry, or gets them really riled up, and you're just like, look, this isn't beneficial for you. So you need to kind of avoid it. So don't let anything into your senses. It's going to take you down, because then they'll make use of that. The second thing is that custody of the mind. Now, normally, custody of the mind is talked about in relationship to the sixth and the ninth commandment. But that's not what we're talking. I mean, that's part of this, but that's only one part of it. It's a much broader virtue. It's the virtue in which you never let anything come into your imagination that is going to cause any kind of a problem. And this is one of the reasons why I think it's really important that people do this. This is one of the real problems you're seeing today. People actually say, well, I can think about it as long, you know, it's okay to thoughts aren't necessarily sinful, which is completely false. Of course, our Lord said that that's not the case. But that's why it's really important to keep custody of the mind, that is, over your imagination, because that's always their entry point in relationship to suggesting things to you. Now, the way demons normally function is they'll tempt you normally, right, and get you to do something you're not supposed to do. Then they'll get you to obsess about it. You know, keep thinking about, oh, well, you know, this is my problem. This is one of the reasons I tell people that are scrupulous. I'll tell them, look, you're just not that important. You know, whether you committed a sin or not is simply not that important in relationship to how you're relating to God. Right, and the reason you have to say that with them is because they're obsessing about this, and that's exactly the psychological type of thing that the demons want to do to get the person focused on their sin, focused on themselves, which is, means it's ultimately rooted in pride, right? But they try and get them focused, and that means you just have to get your mind off it, custody of the mind. So that's a really important virtue, because that's where they start. And then once they obsess you, they drive you down to get you to do worse and worse and worse things until eventually they get you to do something really stupid, which causes possession. And that takes time, of course, and they're patient. They're very patient. And they'll lie and wait and watch your defects, because they know what your defects are, right? They know your defects far better than you do. And that's another thing you can do to protect yourself, is root out your defects. The Teresa of Avila and all the saints always talked about how you should start with the most predominant defect. So you find, you know, if there's one defect which is the worst, you start with that and you remove it. Why is removing your defect important? Defect is another name for vice. St. John of the Cross says vice is always rooted in an attachment to something, right? So I think you heard the last time you were here, you heard me use this analogy. It's like the dog, right? You take a rag, you shake it in front of the dog. The dog clamps onto it. There's the attachment, right? After that, you can just drag him anywhere you want. That's exactly how our attachments are in this life in relationship to demons. Any attachment we have, they can pull our chain psychologically or emotionally to get us to do what they want us to do. And this is one of the reasons why people have to be very careful. That's why John of the Cross says you can have attachments to absolutely nothing created, an attachment to God alone. Okay, so obviously that's a person has to reach a certain level of perfection to attain that, but that's one of the reasons you have to stand. If you find yourself getting emotionally upset, which the demons can kind of use, and by the way, they can move your emotions too. They can put a thought in your mind and then move your emotions really strong so that you get this really emotional reaction to what you're perceiving. Again, this is one of the reasons why, like, if you're married or in a relationship or with anybody, if you feel some kind of emotional reaction, that's a sign of two things. One, you got to get your mind off it and clear your mind so that the demons don't make use of it. The second thing is there's an attachment somewhere. You have to find out, what's that attachment? One of the things that you can do is actually pray to Our Lady of Sorrows to ask her to reveal two things. One, whether there's some kind of diabolic influence in relationship to some particular thing that you're dealing with. The second thing is you can pray to Our Lady of Sorrows in order to ask her, reveal to me what my greatest defect is. And a lot of times people will find out things that they had never realized about themselves. Why Our Lady of Sorrows? Because when she and St. Joseph took Jesus to St. Simeon, he said, "Your soul shall be pierced so that the hearts of many will be laid bare." In other words, it's precisely through her suffering that she merited the ability in the eyes of God, or merited the capacity, because God gave it to her, to reveal hidden things in relationship to other people or things or that type of those kinds of things. So what you can do is pray to her, "Reveal to me what my predominant defect is. Reveal to me if I'm dealing with, you know, something that's diabolic," right? The other side of that is, and that's one of the reasons why it's really important, reveal your defects, work on your defects, get rid of them so the demons can't make use of them. That's one of the principal ways that you're going to become protected. You have to protect yourself from them. That just means not allowing yourself to develop any kind of bad habits. The other side of things is, too, is that they, in relationship to Our Lady of Sorrows, is one of the, she revealed that one of the aspects of the devotion to Our Lady of Sorrows is that she would protect you and your family members from diabolic influence. So that's one of the things that you can do, is develop a devotion to her under that title. And people ask me, why do we have to develop a devotion unto Our Lady under a specific title? And that's because God wants to draw attention to her various perfections under different titles. So that's one of the reasons. So if we honor Our Lady by developing a devotion to her under the title of Our Lady of Sorrow, she'll protect our family. Right? So that's part of that. The next thing, so those are kind of just some of the psychological things to be aware of, the fact that they can move our emotions and our imaginations and things like that and manipulate us. And by the way, they'll take their time. They'll just introduce into you some disordered thought, just something very minor, and from that they'll take you down. So that's one of the reasons why custody of the mind, that's why following the Catholic faith, clearly, is one of the reasons why it's so important. Why? Because in all of the exorcisms I've done, there's practically not a doctrine of the church that hasn't come up to which the demons don't object to, right? Or haven't fallen in relationship to. Which actually tells you something. It tells you that the doctrines of the Catholic Church are absolutely true, each and every one of them. And you have to give assent to the whole of what the church teaches, not just part of it. Because the minute you reject any part of it, again, you've stepped out from underneath the authority, that is the Catholic Church's authority to teach in doctrinal issues, and you place yourself in a situation where you can just get led astray very quickly. Which is one of the reasons why people who fall into heresy almost always have as a precursor a problem with the Sixth Commandment, or after the heresy they have a problem with the Sixth Commandment. So that's because, why? Once they've fallen, they're not protected, and the demons drag them down to the most base things. It's one of the reasons why that happens. Okay. Spiritually, what can you do to be protected? Obviously, the sacraments, especially confession. So, with confession, there's two aspects of confession that are very important. The first is the sacramental graces that you receive to stay out of sin, right? And the restoring you to the state of grace, and so as a result, if you've committed mortal sin, if you haven't, you've only committed venial, it's still very beneficial because it gives you the grace to avoid those sins in the future. But it restores you to the state of grace if you have committed mortal sin, and that's your primary protection, as I mentioned. The second thing is the sacrament of humility. Humility is defined as a willingness to lead a life in accordance with the truth by not judging yourself greater than you are. What happens when you go to confession? You have to own up to your failings. So it humbles us. Now, humility is one of the most powerful things to protect yourself. The more humble you are, the less the demons can influence you. In fact, one time a demon was talking about Our Lady and she said her power is in her humility. The more humble you are, the more powerful you become in relationship. In fact, humility is a strength. Why? Because of the fact that A, it's a virtue, and all virtue gives you self-possession, self-control. But it gives you clarity of mind. It gives you a control over yourself that none of these other things do, and that's why the demons will avoid the humble, because they recognize they're more likely to be defeated. Also, God is more likely to protect someone who's humble. If you're really proud and arrogant, God will let you take a beating now and then to get you, you know, humbled a little bit, to bring you down. So it's this is why humility is so key and so important. So it's the sacrament of humility. So regular confession. In fact, in my own personal experience, sometimes the confession is more powerful in liberating somebody than actual solemn exorcism. Sometimes people will actually have an extraordinary diabolic influence, but it's on a very low level. And they'll just go to confession. And the priest gives them, and they confess the sin. And as they confess the sin, and then that removes, as St. Ignatius says, he says, once the sin is aired out, once the thing that the demons are influencing you over is aired out, they lose power over that. And then once you're restored to grace, you're protected. So that actually confessing the sins and getting absolution breaks their control over you to some degree. And in some cases, it can actually break extraordinary diabolic influence as long as if it's on a low level, right? So confession is very important. Obviously, receiving the Eucharist, they can't stand it, right? And this is one of the reasons why it's, obviously because it's God. And it also strengthens us and gives us an increase in grace, which again gives us more protection. It fortifies us, etc. Receiving all the sacraments is very important. So you want to lead a normal sacramental life. If you're committing venial sin, you want to get to confession at least once a month. I don't want to hear this nonsense that you're hearing from other priests who say things like, oh, well, you're only committing venial sin. You just go to communion and that'll suffice. Okay. It's true that the Church does teaches that receiving communion can wipe away venial sin, but you don't know if they have, because you don't know the degree of devoutness with which you have received communion. You don't have certitude, so that's why you have to keep going to confession. If you're committing mortal sin, get to confession regularly to break it. So the sacraments are very important. Leading a normal Catholic sacramental life, educating yourself, can be one of the greatest protections. If you teach yourself the doctrines of the Church, you're less likely to fall into error and therefore become subject to the demons. So getting to Mass regularly, daily Mass is very important. The sacramentals are extremely important. Now, there's different kinds of sacramentals, obviously. There's the various, you can get the St. Benedict medal, which you want blessed in the old rite. Not that the new rite is bad, but that the old rite has two exorcisms over the medal itself. So that's one of the reasons you want to do that. The Benedict medal, the miraculous medal, is sometimes has a great impact in providing protection and help. There's the scapular, which is very important for spiritual warfare. The Padre Pio said that the rosary is one of the greatest weapons in spiritual warfare. So, which is very true. People who say the rosary daily are less likely to get taken to the woodshed by them. They're less likely to. There's other sacramentals like holy water. Now, the new rite holy water is a very simple blessing. It does render it holy. The problem is it's not as efficacious as the old one. And priests, with the clarification and the Summorum Pontificum of Benedict XVI has made it clear that the old rite books were never suppressed. So every priest can use the old rite in relationship to these. And in the old rite of blessing of holy water, you exorcise the salt, you exorcise the water, then you put the two together, and then there's a blessing given to them. So it's doubly exercised. If you can get a hold of Epiphany water made in the old rite, it's triple exercised. Lustral water, which is the water that they begin to make at, but it doesn't become baptismal water. It's the water they do during the Easter Vigil, is also very effective. There's different kinds of waters blessed in honor of different kinds of saints that can be also effective. But water is very helpful, and one of the ways you can protect yourself is by blessing your house on a somewhat frequent basis, you know, once a week or so, especially if you have teenagers, maybe a little bit more often. No, I'm just kidding. But you want to bless the house regularly and have the priest come and bless your house once a year as just a general rule, because the blessed house will actually help you. In fact, exorcists are very often encouraging people to take four Benedict medals after the house is blessed and place the Benedict medals in the four corners of the property to kind of set up a little box, which the demons are less likely to come in to near your house. So holy water is really important. Sometimes I'll do what I call waterboarding, which is if the demon gets a little lippy or won't comply, I'll keep making him drink holy water until he does what he's supposed to do, right? And some of them are brutally sensitive to it. They can hardly take it. The next is exercised oil. It's olive oil that's exercised. You can use it in your cooking. You don't want to fry your bacon in it, obviously, but you do want to, you can use it in salads and things of that sort. There's exercised salt, which is made in the initial stage for making the holy water. You can use in cooking so that it actually provides you a certain degree of protection. I was one time at an institution, and just to see what I was dealing with spiritually, I exercised the salt. The nuns used it. The next day, three people who I thought probably had influence got deathly sick. So it does have an effect. Whether it was an exact correspondence, we're not really sure, but there probably was. So the exercised oil can be very helpful. You can take the exercised oil and put it on the foreheads of your children when you bless them. In fact, blessing your children is one of the principal ways to protect your children. And it just it's just something as simple. If you're the parents, you just say, you know, may God bless you, and you just put you make the sign of the cross on their forehead, or you use the exercised oil for that purpose. Cursing your children is one of the principal ways, or one of the easiest ways, to open your children up to diabolic influence. I know a man who became possessed by a very stout demon because his father cursed him. And that just means that the blessing is actually to provide protection for you. That's part of it. It's also to give you grace and things of that sort. This is one of the reasons why you don't curse anybody or anything. In fact, what most people don't realize is every time you use vulgarities or profanities, you open up the air to diabolic influence. It's right in Scripture. They're called demons of the air. There's a ritual from Milan where you can actually say a prayer to stop storms and tempests. I knew a guy who actually said that ritual when a tornado was coming, and he said that ritual, and as soon as he finished the last line, the thing retracted. Now that doesn't mean every tornado is caused by a demon, but it does mean they can influence the air. This is one of the reasons I tell people, knock it off, right? Even venial sin can have an impact. So those are the other thing is too, is sometimes you can get other things like relics, things of that sort can be very helpful for protection. There's also, you know, developing specific devotions to saints and asking for their protection. Obviously, Our Lady, she has perfect coercive power over demons. It's perfect. I mean, it's so perfect, she doesn't even have to say something to get a demon out. In fact, numerous times when people have been liberated during sessions that I've experienced, Our Lady will appear to the person. I usually don't see it, but I can tell something's happening. Our Lady will appear, Our Lady will simply come. The person sees Our Lady appear. The abyss opens up. The person feels the demon being ripped out of them. It goes down into the abyss, and it closes up, and she disappears. That's the kind of power that she has. They will literally say, when you invoke her name, they're like, no, not her, not her. Because they're afraid of her, because she has perfect course of power. Now, she never uses it aside from God's will. She could come any time. In fact, she's so powerful, she could just literally wipe all the demons out from the face of the planet, but that's not God's will, so she won't do it. But what God's will is that we develop a devotion to her and become dependent upon her and ask her to wrap us in her mantle to protect us and that type of a thing. Obviously, St. Michael, because of the fact that he cast Satan out of heaven and into hell. And Satan has a particular loathing for him, not just because he kicked him out of heaven, but because he was of lower rank. Satan, of course, was the highest created angel created, and his fall was very precipitous. I mean, it was very he went down to the depths, right? And so the fact that a lower angel in rank basically commands and has authority over him is extremely humiliating. Also, Our Lady is very humiliating because she crushes his head. And that crushing the head is the place of pride, right? So the fact that she crushes it means she repeatedly humiliates him, right? And that, again, that's another reason why they don't like anything that has to do with humility, because they don't like humiliation. It's not the thing they hate. The thing they hate the most is loss of power. At this stage, they've lost everything but power. And so they'll do anything. I mean, they'll practically sing the Tantum Ergo, but they won't want to lose power they have over somebody. It's on that level. So that's one of the things to keep in mind, is that they're looking to gain power. Now, there's a certain sense in which you have to have balance in all this, right? Because I have had people, you know, who get a bit paranoid that, you know, there's a demon under every rock. right? He's not under every rock. You know, a lot of people that come to me, you know, a certain percentage of them just have psychological issues. It's not diabolic. Sometimes it's harder to tell somebody, look, you're just a nut, as opposed to telling them you're possessed. Because when people are possessed, sometimes there's a sense of relief. They're like, oh, good, now I know what my problem is and we can get rid of it, right? Okay. But the point in all of this is that Saint Michael is extremely powerful, and you want to invoke him regularly and ask him to protect your family. One of the biggest failings of men, is that they will often protect their family spirit physically, and they'll keep bad things out of the house, but they fail to pray regularly to keep demons from influencing their wife and their family members. And that's one of the biggest failings. They, again, authority is to provide and to protect. He has to provide the grace by praying for the kids and his family and for his wife, and he also has to protect them by making sure the demons don't get into the house. And that actually brings up a real important point. There's a thing called generational spirits. It's spirits which the demons will tempt somebody that has some kind of authority or influence to commit a sin, right? Then the demon gets into that particular family or business or something like that, and then it starts affecting everybody around them. One of the most common things you'll see is the father will commit some grave sin within the home. It gets the demon into the home, and then the demon starts working not just on him, but everybody around him. And you'll actually see this. I've seen it numerous times. The father comes into confession, confesses problems with pornography. The 9-year-old boy who literally should not have any access to this, doesn't even have any training or anything, that doesn't even know about the father's problem, this will come in and start confessing severe temptations against chastity. And so what's this a sign of? The father has to protect the family, and the principal way he protects them is he doesn't commit sin. He works on virtue. He works on providing the graces necessary to keep everybody protected. And it's the same thing that applies to the mother, but to a slightly lesser degree, but it does apply in relationship to her children. Fathers can bless their children and their wife. The wife can bless the children. She cannot bless her husband because she doesn't have authority over him. Right? But she can. So you can't bless in the sense of what they call an imprecatory, which is where you command the blessing. So when the father says, may God bless you, he's actually commanding the blessing to occur, and it occurs as long as the person is properly disposed. With the wife, she does that with her children. But with relationship to her husband and also the children in relationship with their parents, they can have what's called a deprecatory blessing, which is they ask God, God, may you bless my father and my mother or my husband. You can ask for that. And normally speaking, if you're in the state of grace, which makes your prayers meritorious, if you're in the state of grace, and if you are, and your husband is properly disposed, he'll receive the grace for it. Which actually brings up a very important point. One of the primary ways that you protect yourself is through prayer. Now, before I go into why that is, I just want to make an observation about something. If you're in the state of mortal sin, the Council of Trent teaches us that nothing you do, nothing is meritorious in the eyes of God. Doesn't matter if it's a good work. It does not merit any place in heaven or any spiritual benefit. That's formal church teaching. So once you commit a mortal sin, that means that you can't even do anything to get yourself back out of it. That's why the church says that the grace that God gives to us to get back into the state of grace is purely gratuitous. Now, St. Thomas does say, he says, does God hear the prayers of sinners? He says, no. He says, except in one instance. He says, he will hear the prayer of a sinner if the person asks God to forgive them and get them back out, get them out of the state of mortal sin. And he says, not because their prayer is meritorious, but because God, in order for the person to even do that, God has already given them the grace, and so he will honor it because of the grace he's given the individual to do that. So this means that once you fall into mortal sin, you can't pray at all to protect yourself. You're total fodder. You're totally under their whim. Provided God allows it, of course. But getting back to this balance, You have to have a real balance. It's, again, Satan's not under every rock. I tell you, he's under every other rock, you know. And he shifts around from rock to rock. But the point is that you don't want to get too fixated on it or too hung up on it. Because if you do, what's going to happen is the demons will use that to drag you down. They'll get you to obsess about it, and they'll drag you down. See, they have a principle. Their principle is anything but God. Even if it's a truth, they'll get you to fixate on that to an exaggerated degree, to an extreme degree, where it starts detracting from your relationship with God. Right? And that's one of the reasons I tell Scoopers people, look, you're not that important. This is all a distraction. And it's actually, they're using it to take you down spiritually. So you got to get your mind off of it, right? But this balance is extremely important because they also have another principle, which is anything but moderation. Anything but moderation. They'll make you go from one extreme to another. They don't care what that extreme is, as long as it's not moderated, right? Let me give you an example. One time this one exorcist said to me, he says, you know, the exorcist had a real fondness for Mountain Dew. I can sympathize with him, all right? He really liked Mountain, and he drank it all the time, right? So during one of the sessions, he's beating the demons up, and the demons will do this bargaining thing, right? And they say, okay, look it. They said to him, you just let us stay here and we'll bring you a truckload of Mountain Dew. Right. So the guy realizes, okay, you know, because the demons know your defects and they'll point them out while you're in session, right? So, and there's no past sin that's not fodder, although generally speaking, they're legalists, right? They know once a sin is forgiven by God, it no longer has any legal standing in your spiritual life. Except for any restitution that you might have to make. But they're not interested in the restitution so much as they are the fact that this thing God has against you, and they'll use that, right? So they're legalists, right? And total legalists, you tell them, you know, it's a case of saying Simon, it's a game of playing Simon Says, right? You tell them, you know, Simon Says do X, right? Well, people are supposed to do X, not Y. If you're thinking of Y and you tell them to do X, they're going to do X. And that's the way the demons are. They'll know every nook and cranny of the legalism in which they can do that, right? And because of this divine authority, divine economy of authority, they know that they don't have to be subject to something that you're not, in fact, subjecting them to. So they just won't. Okay. So getting back. So the exorcist, what does he do? He gets rid of all of the Mountain Dew in the house and never drinks it again. I'm like, that's not where the virtue lies. The virtue lies in having maybe one a day or one every once a week or something like that. The virtue lies in does not lie in never doing something, unless you're talking about chastity in relationship to someone who's single. But in this particular case, he got the guy to go to the extreme. And then the guy even went even further. You know, he'd be panicked if there was anything that was edible in the house that was enjoyable. I'm like, what are you going to eat? You know. So that's what they're looking for, the extremes. But they'll also get you to want to go to extremes in another sense. Something very common that I see, and this is why, again, so how do you protect yourself? Avoid the extremes. One of the extremes you'll see is people will start taking the religion seriously. But then they'll go to extremes. What do I mean by extremes? They'll do things that they're not spiritually disposed or properly prepared for. Let me give you an example. There's a 300-pound guy, and he's my height, right? He's obviously not muscle-bound, but he decides he's going to run the marathon. And he convinces himself, I can run the marathon. What happens? He gets a block, and right? He can't do it, right? It's the same thing in the spiritual life. Our faculties have to be disposed to the constant praying. You can't just immediately do it. You can't just immediately become perfect. In fact, if you do that, there's a sin involved. It's called simulation. When I used to teach in the seminary, you'd get these guys who are basically leading a somewhat worldly life. They come into the ceremony and all of a sudden they're acting perfect. You just want to smack them. Knock it off. You're not perfect yet. So what does this mean? It means that you have to, you know, you have to have a sense of where you're at. You know, it means, okay, I can pray to a certain amount, but I don't want to push myself beyond that, because then what's going to happen is I'm going to get a vice called hagasthenia. Just Greek term means spiritual burnout. And then what happens is once you burn out, to try and do it again, it means it's even harder to get your spiritual life moving. So moderate it. That's what you have to do. Okay? And keep working towards that perfection. You have to work towards praying always, but you're not going to be able to do it immediately. Right? Okay, so back to the extremes. See, they like extremes, right? So when it comes to prayer, you have to moderate. Okay, I know I can do this amount well. I'll start with that and keep moving my way up. There's 9 levels of prayer. Most people don't know that. There's 9 levels of prayer, of which the 5th level is mystical contemplation, and all the levels up above that are forms of mystical contemplation. Everybody can achieve that. Everybody. If you're just simply faithful to grace, that fidelity to grace is one of the principal ways to protect you against demons, because the demons know that you're always going to respond to grace. They know if they tempt you, God will give you the grace, and then they'll take a beating, so they'll avoid you. But the first 2 levels is vocal prayer. Most people never get beyond that. The next one is meditation, where there's no vocalization. It's a lifting of the mind and heart to God. Now, why is meditation so important? Meditation can literally break diabolic obsession. Why? Because they're obsessing your imagination. As you start using your imagination to pray, which is hard usually in the beginning, because developing a life of prayer is a virtue, and most people don't have it. They have the vice of lack of prayer, so when they first started, it's painful and difficult, and dry and things of that sort. But as they develop it, it becomes easier and delightful, because anytime we perform an action in accord with our habits, we get a certain delight out of it. But as you meditate, what happens is what's filling your mind are God or the things of God. What does that mean about a demon? He's not going to want to get involved with your imagination. Or if he is, he's going to want to get out, because he doesn't want to deal face to face with these things that are holy. Meditation regularly, every day, 15 minutes a day, is one of the principal ways that you can protect you. It's something to teach your children, because if they get to the point where they're meditating 15 minutes to half an hour a day, their odds of having any extraordinary diabolic influence are astronomical. So that's one of the principal things that you want to do. And meditation is, Teresa of Avila says, is the entry level into all the higher levels of prayer. So you'll actually begin to ascend the levels of prayer, which means you're going to overcome defects, which means you're going to gain greater protection. You're also going to get the grace for it. And that's something that's very important. St. Thomas says that religion is a sub-virtue to the virtue of justice, and justice is the virtue by which we render someone what's due to them. You know, I tell somebody, look, if you do this for $10 an hour, I'll give you the $10, right? He does the work. I owe him. What's due to him is the $10, right? In relationship to God, because he created us and causes everything that we have, even our ability to make free choice and all of that, St. Thomas says that the ultimate obligation back to God is to render, as a matter of justice, is to surrender our free will to God. It's called sacrifice. In fact, every single demon I've ever encountered will admit that he failed to sacrifice his own self-will in face of the will of God. So what does this all mean? It means that in relationship to God, we have obligations. There's 2 obligations. Well, St. Thomas says there's 4 acts to the virtue of religion. We won't go into all of them. But one of them is prayer. St. Augustine says if you don't pray, you cannot be saved. We can put that in the terms of the context of what we're talking about today. If you don't pray, you are not going to be protected. It is that simple. Second is sacrifice. So you have to offer sacrifice. Right? That's why when people would go through suffering in the past, they would say, offer it up. Now today, people ridicule that, but excuse me, that was actually a call, because offering, there's sacrifice always has 3 parts. The offertory, the slaying of the victim, and the consuming of it. Right? Well, when you offer it up, you're beginning you're actually making an act of sacrifice. And that sacrifice, if you're in the habit of it, will go a long ways to providing protection. Which brings us to mortification. Demons can't stand the body that fasts. They can't stand it. And the reason being is because in fasting, we have to deny it. And because they have access to our bodies, they want us to follow our emotions, follow our what's in our imagination, and follow whatever they want us to incline towards. Which means that we're doing what? We're obeying our body. That's what they want us to do. Because then from there, they can control us. Mortification subdues the body, brings it into subjection, and as a result, the demons don't want to get involved with someone like that, because if they introduce something that's disordered and you're in the habit of keeping it under control, you'll be much more sensitive to that and much more likely to turn on the demons and beat them up. One of the things I tell people is every temptation, whether it's from the world, the flesh, or the devil, because those are the 3 sources, all pivot on the flesh. Right? Devil can only influence the flesh. The world only influences the flesh. It all pivots on the flesh. You got to get that under control. But I tell people that even if it's from the world or the flesh, beat the demon up anyway, right? It's not like he doesn't deserve it, you know. Once in a while, they'll say, hey, that's not part of the deal, or that's not my responsibility, not my problem, right? But the point is that if it is from a diabolic cause, some type of a temptation, and you beat the demon, if you turn him, do it. Christ actually gave the example. Get behind me, Satan. He showed us the example, right? And what Christ was showing by having Peter do it, that even your closest friends can be forms of temptation, right? Even the highest things in this life can be forms of temptation if you're not careful, if you don't have your appetites subjected. So that being said, we have to keep those things under control. But mortification will subdue the body and keep you from having these problems. Prayer itself is a form of mortification, by the way. First of all, it's hard and it's difficult. Once in a while, you get these people who say, oh, you know, praying is for women, you know. Well, I'll grant, most authors, spiritual writers, say that women actually get more graces than men, right? You can kind of see it, I think. But the reason why, so you'll hear people say, oh, that's for women, and really it's just a subtle form of effeminacy. St. Thomas defines effeminacy as an attachment to pleasure to such a degree that you won't pursue what's hard or arduous. Prayer is hard. It's manly activity. Why do you think Christ did so much of it? Right? And this is something that's really important. You know, a lot of times I just tell guys, they're like, well, I'm having a hard time, you know, making myself pray. Well, be a man and just tell yourself, I'm going to be a man and I'm going to do it. Right? It's the same thing with celibacy. You know, everyone's like, oh, celibacy, it makes you lighten the loafers, as they say. I'm like, no, it's the exact opposite. It makes you manly because you have to have self-control and self-discipline interiorly. It's the same thing with prayer. It mortifies the flesh because it requires you to tell your flesh, no, I'm not going to go eat. I'm not going to go watch TV. I'm not going to do these. I'm going to do this. And of course, the emotions are moved by what's in our imagination, St. Thomas says. So as we're using our imagination for the things that pertain to God, the emotions aren't being fed, which means they have to quieten down. Which means once in a while, if you don't have that virtue yet, they'll start climbing, I don't like this, I want my, you know, go eat that chocolate, you know, that kind of a thing. So, what's that all mean? It means that you have to mortify yourself in relationship to all this. Getting back to a little bit about in relationship to some of this, the supernatural things, various devotions, having devotions to different saints, is very important. If you're having a particular defect, start working on the virtue opposite of that, but ask the saint who mastered that virtue. You know, if you're struggling with chastity, develop a devotion to Mary Magdalene, St. Maria Goretti, all the virgin saints like St. Catherine of Siena and St. Teresa of Avila, all these people that develop those virtues, develop that, and then that they'll actually protect you too in relationship to the demons. One guy that I like to promote a devotion to is Padre Pio. In about 70% of the case, though, that guy will show up and beat the guy up. And he's Johnny on the spot. I mean, he's good. One time I asked a demon, why do you hate him so much? Padre Pio, and he says, because he loved Our Lady and Our Lady loved him. Which brings me to the last thing, which we'll talk about. That'll give us a little bit of time to for question and answer. The two virtues that are going to provide the greatest amount of protection to you are humility, which we talked about already, and charity. Humility will help you to, again, not get proud or puffed up, because once you become proud, the demons can make use of that because they can influence your judgment by playing on your pride. Whereas with charity, if you love God, if your heart is completely devoted to God, because charity is defined as love of God and love of neighbor for the sake of God. It's not just loving your neighbor. Christ said, look, the Gentiles do as much. We're talking about loving your neighbor for God's sake. So if you do that and you work on charity and you keep doing it, then what will happen is the demons will avoid you because they know that your attachment is to God. They know that if they try and tempt you to do something against somebody else, you're likely to have a revulsion against it. So charity is one of the principal things to develop, loving God. And how you do that? You just tell him, you know, God, I love you. You do that regularly throughout the course of the day. St. Augustine says, if you don't pray, you will not be saved. That's because of the matter of justice. You have an obligation to pray at least 15 minutes a day. And during those prayers, you should be making frequent acts of love to God. So those are the things that you want to do. Those are some of the things that will keep you protected. You can ask other people for prayers. Oh, one last thing. There's a group started by two exorcists because they noticed that there were certain families that, you know, the parents would do everything they possibly could to raise the child rightly, and the parent, and they did everything, and all of a sudden they'd have one of the kids, for no reason, apparent reason whatsoever, the kid would just go off in left field. You're like, what happened there? You know, and it's really weirded stuff, right? So the exorcists began to discover that this is probably diabolic, so they set up this group called Auxilium Christianorum. I'll write it down here in just a minute. It's called Auxilium Christianorum. And basically, it's a set of prayers, takes about 5 to 7 minutes a day. You have to also be saying the rosary every day and leading a Catholic life in order to be a member. But once you start saying these prayers, you become a member of this group called Auxilium Christianorum. And part of this prayer of this group is that they're praying for each other. So you're literally plugging into tens of thousands of people praying for you and your family right off the bat just by becoming a member. So, and it's doing extremely well. Of course, it's been under attack a couple of times, but that's, you know, I always tell people, you know, they'll say, man, that's happening in your life. And you're like, well, look, if nothing bad was happening in my life, I would think to myself I'm doing something wrong, because the demons would be saying, hey, look, leave him alone. He's doing our bidding, right? But if you start beating up on him, that's when they start going on the attack, right? So it's been under a little bit of attack, but it's also been extremely effective. So it's one of the groups that I would highly recommend that you join, especially for the sake of your family members. And especially if you have one of them that's having a real difficulty, sometimes even having them say it. I usually tell people, don't have people say it until they're 16 or older, only because of the fact that the prayers, very often, people who have started saying these prayers, about 50% of them have noticed a drastic, in a good way, a very significant change in their spiritual life. Graces that they hadn't had before, overcoming defects, overcoming vices, you know, people in their family kind of getting their act together, that type of a thing. And so some of them, you know, have experienced that, and a person has to be sufficiently old enough, mature enough spiritually in order to be able to process some of the stuff that can happen. So, okay, we'll stop there.